You're listening to Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Eric Thiel, and I am joined in the studio today for a live session by William Fitzsimmons and his band, making a trip all the way up north to Eugene, but gracious enough to stop by for a live session. Thanks so much for being here, you guys.
Oh, thanks for having us. Yeah.
So, William, let me start with you. You grew up in a household that was a little unusual in that you had two parents who were both blind. That must have keyed you in to sound in a much different way than what a lot of people experience.
Yeah, you know, the music was, it was really important. It was fun, but it was more of a communicative thing. It was more of like a, you know, just the main way that we enjoyed each other's company. And my parents are both musicians. And yeah, it was kind of, it was different. Sometimes it was fun. Sometimes it was a little weird, but I'm glad it worked out that way.
Now, you said that both of your parents played music. Did you join them when you were a kid, or was that something that you just your parents did?
Oh, no. Yeah, they were very encouraging. They wanted us to be able to speak that language as well. And, you know, we were obviously really bad from the beginning. I was, you know, my first musical experiences would have been sitting on the piano bench with my mom and, you know, banging away at the keys and her trying not to get too annoyed while she was trying to practice or something like that. But yeah, no, they definitely wanted us to play and to be a part of it for sure.
And what were their genres?
Boring and a little bit more boring, I guess. No, I shouldn't say that. I love that kind of music too. Now, my dad was big into like classical and Baroque music and mostly organ, pipe organ stuff. And
right, you had a pipe organ in your house, right?
Yeah. That was kind of his last great adventure when his my parents are both blind, and my dad lost his sight more degeneratively and gradually than my mother lost it immediately. But that was kind of my dad's last great adventure before he went totally blind, he's kind of racing his eyes, right, to finish the organ in the house, and he did it. And
is it still functional?
After they split up, we had to leave the house, and you know, you can't. Unfortunately, those don't yeah, move well once they're installed in the house. But he still has an electric organ in his house. He still plays, and my mom was into folk music, so nothing too heavy in the household.
Yeah, at least in terms of the music that you do, it's obvious that you've kind of traveled more in the direction of what your mom was into. But as you've gotten a little bit older, do you have a bit more appreciation now for that music that your father was into?
Oh, I definitely do. And it's funny too, because I mean my dad's wonderful guy, but I think he looks down on some of the simplicity of the music that I make, because it's, you know, the music he loves is very involved and traditional and complicated and stuff. But I still carry both of those things with me very closely, and there's a lot of nostalgia and a lot of appreciation that's always going to be there, I think.
Yeah. So have you thought about some orchestral parts just as a nod to your dad?
No, I think it would be a disaster if I did that. I think, can you make orchestral music with four chords? Does that
sure.
I think you can do that.
Well, let's hear a tune.
Sure, yeah. This is called Wounded Head.
How this feels like a floating for the physical form you crave, and the gentle reminders hover and still the same. For the curative portion, the dysthymic of bold and blue, you were softened and hollow, reflecting this winter hue. Wounded head, you will be fine.
You will be fine.
Gently embrace or hold you in time. So you open the gray from your assaulted eye, feel the string that once broken ended and slowly tie. hope for remedies, comfort for the listless and the women. And the ghost of your father follows you home no more. The water runs through you. Won't you open your eyes?
It's William Fitzsimmons live on Jefferson Public Radio, also streaming online at ijpr.org. Before we get too far along, William, why don't you introduce your bandmates?
Yeah, on the banjo and backing vocals is Jonathan Gray. Playing the melodica and shaker and background vocals is Mr. Michael Flynn. And playing the
he's amped up and ready.
Yeah, he's ready to go. They're all, I mean, as you can tell,
it's a mellow instrument, but he is charged.
Yeah,
up.
Yeah, he's ready to go. And playing the mandolin and background vocals is Josh Kaler.
Are you guys all from the same place, or did you kind of meet on the road?
No, I just picked these guys up like 5 minutes ago, man. They're
the bus stop.
They're hitchhiking down the Shasta Trail. What? That's not even a thing.
They're panning for gold.
Yeah. Is that? Can you still find any of that here? I've been playing with these guys for a few years, and they're actually from, they live in Charleston, South Carolina, and I live in Illinois. So, we just kind of met them through a situation, and we've been playing together ever since.
You have kind of an interesting background as it applies to now doing music professionally, in that you are a trained psychologist, worked as a counselor for some time. Right?
Yeah, counselor. Yeah, so I have a master's, not a PhD, okay. So I can't call myself a psychologist.
Sure.
But counselor, therapist, one of those things.
How long were you in that course of study in that field?
Shaman. Medicine man.
It's a more nebulous title,
right? I prefer
right?
healer, if possible. Maybe you can edit that in later.
How many years were you healing people?
You actually did use it. Thank you. That was nice of you. I worked in a clinical setting for about 5 years, and I did individual and group practice for a couple of years. And it was great. I mean, it's hard work, but it's really rewarding emotionally and personally. I love music too, but yeah, I kind of fell into this a little bit backwards. I'm really grateful I did, but it's kind of funny. I sort of thought I would, I'd end up finishing off my doctoral degree and living out my days as a, bearded kind of tweed wearing psychologist. Yeah.
One of the things that is said often about counselors and people who work in that profession is that they're often learning a lot about themselves.
Sure.
through the process of trying to heal others or work with others. What were the kinds of things that you were learning about yourself that maybe were unexpected to you?
I was not healthy enough to be a therapist. I mean, I'm sort of kidding, but I'm kind of serious too. Is that the notion that people that think they're being very altruistic when they go into a service profession like that are there only to help other people is really it's a little bit flawed. And you said it in a very generous way, where it's learning about yourself, but really it ends up being more like fixing yourself at first, and that's okay. But unfortunately, a lot of people don't go into it with that type of insight. But the stuff that I was learning was that I did have a lot of I needed to experience a lot of things and to have a lot of kind of difficult life lessons before I was prepared to maybe speak with any sort of authority or wisdom on anything whatsoever. And, that's the folly of youth, I suppose. But it was good. And I went through some necessary hard times, not intentionally, but they happened. And And I'm grateful now being on the other side of it.
It's not much of a stretch to assume that music is a kind of counselor for you also.
Yeah, in both directions too. You know, it started out being very omnidirectional, and it was just a, you know, it was about figuring myself out and having some catharsis and really dumping out, like confessing a lot of things I had to get out. And then, over time, I realized that I could kind of wed these two passions that I had, and that it probably wasn't an accident that I ended up having a degree in, you know, in counseling and was able to play music. And I thought, how cool would it be to join those two things and actually use music as a, you know, it's sort of an unusual but very effective form of therapy for other people and myself.
Hmm. Your albums have been extraordinarily personal in many of the stories that you tell.
Sure.
Is it cathartic or is it more damaging to you to have to relive all of those issues night after night in performances and then on top of that in interviews like this where you're talking about them all the time?
Right. It's both. It starts out as very, and I didn't realize it would be. I thought it would be only positive, but then I realized that when you do this and when you have good fortune with it, you end up spending more and more time with these thoughts and these ideas than you would other. You know, when I started out, when I wrote my first songs, it was really just, it was more for me than anybody else. So if I didn't want to think about it or play it, I just didn't pick the guitar up. Right. You know, it wasn't an issue. But, you know, now I'm so lucky I get to, you know, play hundreds and hundreds of shows and travel, you know, different parts of the world. And so it does change it. And there's a point at which it's happened with every single song that I've written now the past several years where it stops being about me and being a curative kind of process. And I have to decide that I'll either let it weigh heavily on me and, you know, stay with it or develop an understanding that it's about reaching out to someone else and letting it become their song more than mine. But that's difficult. And, you know, some nights playing these songs is harder than others.
Was there a moment, a specific show or a poignant moment where you kind of turned that corner?
It's different for every song. Yeah. And for every record. And the Sparrow and the Crow, which was the one before the new one, is that was, I wrote that after my wife and I ended up splitting up, and that's the one that's been hardest to shake, I guess. And I feel like I've made a lot of progress in that area, but now it's not so discreet. It's really a continuous kind of gradual thing where, you know, you'll make some progress, two steps forward, one step back kind of thing. You'll be up there and, I don't know, you'll be singing just one lyric that has never been an issue, and all of a sudden it kind of hits you in the face and you have to take a deep breath. But it's, you know, it's, I'm the one that chose to write about those things. So I can only have myself to blame.
Well, let's talk about the new album. There's some headiness to this new album that's just out on Network Records, Gold in the Shadow. It is described, maybe somewhat accurately, as a musical reflection of personal resuscitation and psychological renovation. And is it true that you based the songs, or at least some of the songs, on a diagnostic journal?
Yeah, the DSM-4.
Yeah, crack the code for us.
Well, it's just a, the DSM is just a, it's the Bible of mental health, you know, you would call it. And it's just a classification system for all the different types of mental illnesses, and they're, you know, they're subcategories and the symptomatology that goes into them and all that stuff. And it actually is kind of interesting, even if someone isn't in love with that field. I mean, it's kind of a, it's like a, you know, a Reader's Digest of all the ways that the brain can get really messed up. And that sounds morbid, but, you know, disease is an interesting thing. And if you're someone that cares about, you know, healing, then you have to sort of fall in love with sickness, if that makes any sense, you know, at least the understanding of sickness. But for me, it seemed like a really cool way to frame the idea of healing is to really get as deep into disease and a disease model as I could, and then try to work my way out of it and, you know, see what does change mean? What does it mean if I'm, you know, struggling with depression, if I'm struggling with grief, what would it actually feel like, and what would the process be if I were to change and I were to assimilate the past with what I'm going through now? And, you know, that's what it was all about, just sort of chronicling that experience and going through it myself.
William Fitzsimmons is my guest live on Jefferson Public Radio. Can we hear another tune?
Yeah, totally. This is called The Winter From Her Leaving.
Shove me out to sea, the sea quiet of December, to the deep utter.
It's William Fitzsimmons live on Jefferson Public Radio, streaming online at ijpr.org. A song there from the new album Gold in the Shadow, out on Network Records. One of the things that I find interesting and fascinating about some of your songs, and actually one of the things that drew me to your music initially was...
How awesome it is?
Absolutely.
Wait, what? What were you going to say? Sorry.
You have this incredibly mellow way about you and about your music, but at the same time you bring in these sort of unusual, sometimes odd electronic elements to generally straightforward folk-based singer-songwriter music. Mm-hmm. Is that a type of music that you also enjoy, or are you just, again, going back to one of the first questions we talked about, just really aware of sounds and how to integrate various sounds?
I don't know. I only listen to my own music. Mm. So I don't,
really?
I'm not, yeah, I've never, I don't understand why there'd be any other reason to listen to anyone else, but... But me, that's terrible. Please use that as a teaser for the show. No, I mean, I guess it's a little bit of both. I like, it's hard to explain experientially what it's like to grow up in a house with disabled parents. And in some ways, it's really normal. And other ways, it's not. I mean, I do, I do enjoy experience. I mean, as you can tell by dress, I don't experience the world very visually.
I like your dress.
Oh, thanks very much. It's a little bit monochromatic today. I look like a Boy Scout, like a grown-up Boy Scout. I guess that'd be called an Eagle Scout. No opinion on that? Anyways. it was just a thing. You know, we didn't have pictures on the walls, and we didn't have the lights on half the time. It was just, you know, your ears are what really counted. So I like things that sound a little bit different and things that other people might not really be particularly musical. I think to me are kind of, you know, musical. Mm-hmm. I don't know, kind of enjoyable to listen to. And the other thing is, it's, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. And, you know, when I started out doing this, I didn't know what the heck I was doing. And yeah, I was kind of throwing things together that sounded right to me and that were, you know, were evocative. My whole goal from the beginning is to create something that was, you know, sort of very salient and very powerful emotionally, and something that would hit somebody really, really deep, and not just in a entertaining way, but something that could actually motivate someone to change a little bit, you know. So, I guess it's sort of all of the above.
A lot of the songs that you write and a lot of the lyrics that you write tend to come across as very interpretive, meaning that they can mean different things to different people. Mm-hmm. And one thing that's always struck me kind of humorous about music is how poorly interpreted sometimes lyrics can be, where you're driving down the road and you've got the sunroof open and your windows down and you're jamming to a tune and, oh, hey, this is about a specific mental illness.
Right.
Like, does that ever strike you as just a bizarre happening for the things that you're creating and producing?
No, I'm glad you asked that. I'm a constructivist philosophically, and I believe that I'm not a relativist. I mean, I do believe that there are some absolute truths that exist in the world. I don't know if the band would agree with me on that, but that's what I personally believe. But
we're nihilists.
Fatalists, in fact. With music, I think that meaning is it should be constructed. It shouldn't be dictated. And you know, I don't enjoy the process of someone asking me, like a fan asking me what a song means, and not out of rudeness. I mean, I'm honored they would want to know, but I think it's a little bit like seeing a movie of your favorite childhood book and all the beautiful images and scenes and, you know, lived out narrative in your head gets replaced by someone else's vision of it. And, you know, so when someone listens to that, like that song that we just played, you know, The Winter From Her Leaving, like it might remind them of their dad or something, you know, something really different that I never would have intentionally put in there. And if they hear me like describe what every single lyric and metaphor means, it's going to take something away from their own constructed meaning. So I actually think that's the really amazing thing about music and specifically in art in general, is that we get to decide what it means to us, and we get to experience it like that very idiosyncratically. And, you know, I don't know. I think that's a really cool thing that we should actually encourage instead of try to destroy.
William Fitzsimmons is my guest live on Jefferson Public Radio, streaming at ijpr.org. Can we hear another tune?
Yeah, I'd love to. This is called Blood and Bones.
Falling towards the evening, from the last sight that you saw, from the corner of the curtain, it's perching on the wall. And I kept the words you gave me. You're the song I try to sing. I was feeling when I saw you to every living thing. sparrow to the mortar. I have nothing left to hide. You're the seed that softly sowed in ever to my side.
William Fitzsimmons live on Jefferson Public Radio, streaming at ijpr.org. The new album, Gold in the Shadow, out on Network Records. So I have to ask before you go about the beard, because this is kind of a signature appearance.
I had no idea you'd be asking about that.
But more so than the beard, it's kind of permeating the band a little bit.
Sure.
Josh, you are the man out.
Yeah, it's
what's going on there? We've got one glorious stash. One sort of Dick Dastardly waxed stash, and then a beard of epic proportion at this point.
Well described.
Just delightful. It's marvelous.
Oh, thank you. How did
all of this get started?
I like to think that it's because we're real men. I don't know what else to. I don't know how else to interpret that. You as well, Josh.
Yeah,
well.
I mean, I'm trying. I'm giving it my college try over here.
I mean, mine's just a family thing. I don't even know if I ever heard the genesis of Johnny's or Michael's, really. I don't know. Where did yours?
I've always had weird facial hairs, and this one stuck about 12 years ago, I guess.
He's 17 years old.
Yeah, true. Yeah. I was young, but yeah, I don't know. It's fun to do something.
Yeah.
It grows there. Might as well do something interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't have to go into a bank in the morning, so I can do what I want with my face.
Well played. Michael, where did yours?
This started in early December just to kind of piss my parents off and ruin our Christmas pictures. And it came in so triumphantly I couldn't bear to part with it.
That's much more noble.
Yeah, yeah, I like that reason better, yeah.
You know, one of the things that I was thinking about talking with you today is the idea that so much of your music is so personal,
mm-hmm.
and really looks inside yourself, that the beard almost is kind of a veil in terms of there being something between you and others. Is that something that's ever conscious for you?
I mean, yeah, people ask me that. Even before I was a musician, they say, what are you hiding behind? You know, because... You know, there's that old thing with somebody has a beard is trying to hide something. And I guess an incredibly sexy jawline is the first thing I'm trying to get people away from. No, I honestly don't know. Maybe. I mean, maybe it's a little bit of a distraction, you know. It's a kind of a sublimation, I guess. It's some of the energy is put towards that. So maybe a lot of the vulnerability in the music doesn't quite get as ripped apart as it would otherwise. But... yeah, I don't know, maybe. But like I said, you know, all the Fitzsimmons men are very, very, very bearded fellows. So, I think that to me is the bigger thing. But
yeah,
but there's a little bit of hiding going on.
The new album, Gold in the Shadow, this one is sort of about healing and turning the corner and looking ahead. When all of these things are exercised, what is there for you in terms of your songwriting?
Oh, it's done.
You're done.
I got the well is dry.
More Katy Perry covers?
Oh, man, hopefully not. Sorry about that.
How's that gone over for you?
Really good, unfortunately. You know,
What prompted that?
You know, me taking the encouragement of somebody at a record label when I should have said no to something. I mean, I like doing ironic covers, or at least I used to. I think there's a lot of really cool music that doesn't get appreciated, like the writing doesn't, because it's produced in a certain way. So I like kind of, you know, flipping a genre upside down a little bit. And I wasn't the first one to do that, and I won't be the last. But
it turned out great.
Oh, that's very nice. And a lot of my fans, they like that one a lot. And I think there's a lot of people that found my other music through that. So that's cool. I have to be thankful for that.
William Fitzsimmons is my guest live on Jefferson Public Radio. William, Jonathan, Michael, Josh, it's been a real pleasure to have you guys in here. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you.
Do you guys have time to play one more short one?
Yeah, I'd love to play another song.
That'd be great.
Yeah. We'll do. We'll finish with a hopeful one, since the rest of my career is rather somber and morbid. Yeah.
Moonlight will fall, winter will end, harvest will come. Your heart will mend. La, da, da, da. Good morning. Good morning.
William Fitzsimmons live on Jefferson Public Radio. Thanks so much for coming in.
Yeah, thank you so much.